This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Egypt has said they cannot enter Egypt, but at the same time, diplomacy is still working, trying to strike a deal, the U.S. and Egypt, to take displaced Palestinians.
That's Nola Haynes, a professor with the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University. Details coming up. Also, there are questions about China's infrastructure spending in Africa. And vote counting continues in Liberia's election. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The death toll in the fighting between Israeli and Hamas militants is approaching 3,000 since Saturday, when Hamas forces attacked Israel. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel to consult with leaders there. In the Gaza Strip, food, water, and fuel are running low after Israel imposed a strict blockade on the Palestinian territory. Blinken today assured Israel of strong U.S. support. However, he said democracies must hold themselves to a higher standard in conflicts, and Israel should take every possible precaution to avoid harming civilians. We have journalist Linda Gradstein on the line with us now from Jerusalem. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Linda.
Thank you.
So what is the latest from where you are, Linda?
Well, the latest is that, you know, as you said, Secretary Blinken is here and was very strong in his support for Israel, as was President Biden in his speech a couple of days ago. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed again to destroy the military capabilities of Hamas. The airstrikes continued as the death toll in Gaza of civilians also continues to climb. Israel says it's targeting senior Hamas officials and has killed quite a few of them. There was continued sporadic rocket fire today, but less than in previous days. At the same time, Israel announced that it is moving all schools to Zoom, meaning that Israel expects this to be a protracted conflict.
So talk to us maybe about Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has addressed the nation alongside the opposition party leader Benny Gantz after the pair agreed to form an emergency government to direct war against Hamas. So this thing is escalating.
Yes, it does seem to be escalating. Israel has expanded its government with the addition of Benny Gantz's party. Gantz himself is a former chief of staff, has a lot of military experience, but the largest opposition party called Yesh Atid, run by Yair Lapid, has not yet joined the government. I don't think it's going to make any huge difference. It's just another sign that this conflict is going to continue. Israel has called up some 300,000 reservists, everybody is kind of expecting a ground invasion, which is going to be somewhat complicated. Gaza is very densely populated. Also, for the first time, the Israeli national airline, El Al, is going to fly planes on the Jewish Sabbath when it's forbidden in order to bring reservists from various parts of the world back to Israel to join their units.
Talking about airlines, British Airways has suspended flights to and from Israel due to safety concerns. So regarding flights to Israel, are there more cancellations?
Oh, yeah. Almost all the airlines have canceled. The only airlines still running are the Israeli airlines, and people have really been scrambling, both those who want to leave Israel and those who want to come back to fight, have really been scrambling to get flights. And there have been a lot of reports of, for example, tourists who were stranded here who need refills on their medications. And actually, Israeli pharmacies are trying to help them them. There have been reports of people who, you know, can't get home, people who want to leave. So it's pretty chaotic, actually. I know someone who left this morning for a planned visit to the United States, and he said he was online for more than 4.5 hours just to check in.
And Linda, Gaza's. Let's talk about Gaza and this. You said it's a very densely populated city. So Gaza's sole power station has run out of fuel amid a tightening of siege. Hundreds of terrified people are seeking shelters by the largest hospital there. And the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for essential life-saving supplies of fuel, food, and water to be allowed into Gaza. Is that in any way feasible?
Well, it is feasible if Israel decides to lift the siege, but Israeli officials repeated today that as long as Hamas continues to hold hostages, somewhere between 100 and 150, Israel will not allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. The only two entries and exit points from Gaza are the sea, or to Israel, or to Egypt. Egypt tried to send in a humanitarian relief convoy, and Israel bombed the road so that they couldn't do that. The situation in Gaza, even before this started, was pretty bad, with humanitarian organizations saying that 90% of the water in Gaza isn't drinkable, people living on the verge of poverty. And now, with no electricity, with the hospitals running out of medicine, with people running out of food, it's just getting worse.
And lastly, we've talked about this, security lapses, and it started out as rumors, and now the chairman of the powerful U.S. House Foreign Affairs Committee has said Israel received a warning from Egypt of potential violence 3 days before Hamas caught Israel forces off guard in this large-scale attack.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's hard to know exactly what happened. I'm sure there's going to be an investigation committee about what exactly happened. But I think that Israel, underestimated Hamas. Israel thought that Hamas was not interested in an all-out war. So Israel also made a lot of mistakes. You know, it's 50 years almost to the day of the Yom Kippur War, which also took Israel by surprise. And now there's a lot of comparisons of those. But it's really hard to understand how Israeli intelligence really was so taken by surprise in this case.
VOA's Linda Gradstein updating us from Jerusalem. Welcome and thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Rockets are being fired into Israel as Israeli troops mass near the border with Gaza, and Israeli aircraft continue to pound the Gaza Strip for a fifth day after Hamas militants attacked Israeli neighborhoods near Gaza on Saturday. VOA's Carol Van Dam spoke with Nola Haynes, a professor at the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University, about diplomatic efforts to halt the fighting and what happens if Hamas is ousted from Gaza.
It's too early. There are so many unknowns in terms of what's going to happen on the Palestine side, on the Palestinian side. The core issue right now is, where are they going to go? Egypt has said they cannot enter Egypt, but at the same time, diplomacy is still working, trying to strike a deal, the U.S. and Egypt, to take displaced Palestinians. But in terms of who will take over if Hamas falls, that is still too early to decide. This is my hope. I'm not speaking for anyone. This is my hope. There are groups in Palestine who are interested in a two-state solution. And hopefully that two-state solution can happen if there are more democratic voices that come to the top, so to speak. So if Hamas does fall and Palestinians are no longer under the grip of a terrorist organization, my sincere hope is that there are more democratic voices that can step into the leadership vacuum.
But at this point, when they're basically at war with Israel, I don't understand how they would be holding elections and all of that and going through the whole democratic process of electing new leaders.
Probably not. Just like in Ukraine, elections are halted. I would imagine it would be something similar, because like I said, displacement right now is the main issue. Right now, of the 2.3 million people that live in Gaza, 180,000 of them are in UN shelters. So when I say displacement right now is the core issue, that absolutely is the core issue. So I agree. I don't think that elections will happen for quite some time.
Are you concerned that other countries are going to get involved either on the side of Israel or the Palestinians in the occupied territories? Could this lead to a wider conflagration of the conflict?
If you're speaking about Iran, you know, a lot of people are asking, are very concerned about Iran's role. And as far as I understand, Iran is saying that they did not have any direct involvement, and we don't have evidence of that. In fact, John Kirby was very clear to reject claims in the Wall Street Journal that said Iran had direct involvement. Now, we do know that Iran historically has definitely helped train terrorists and cultivate terrorists, but in terms of Hamas's attack, we are not sure. If we are thinking about diplomacy, I know that there are other countries involved, like Qatar, who are definitely trying to negotiate between Israel and Hamas in terms of letting hostages go, especially women and youth. But other countries getting involved, again, it's still too early to determine that. But I know right now Iran is the country on everyone's mind, and they have said they are not directly involved.
On the diplomacy front, what is Egypt doing?
Egypt is talking to the United States. They have made statements that their border is closed, but that doesn't mean that diplomacy ends. So I do know that there are talks that are happening. I do not know what the outcome of those talks will be, but as of yesterday, the Israeli government corrected their statement where they urged Palestinians to go to Egypt because Egypt has said, no, 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 our borders are closed. However, diplomacy lines are still open, and I am a diplomacy first person. So I'm hoping that through diplomacy, Egypt will say, okay, we will take maybe women, maybe youth.
You talked earlier about the two-state solution idea that has been floated around before. Do you see that as a realistic option right now?
This is the beginning of the war. I honestly don't know. As you know, war it's chaos. You can't really project anything, especially this early.
That's Nola Haynes, a professor with the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University here in Washington and a member of the International Security Advisory Board, a U.S. State Department affiliate. She spoke to VOA's Carol Van Dam. You can find more on the conflict between Hamas and Israel on voaafrica.com and our VOA Africa social media sites. About 300 people protested at the United States consulate in Johannesburg, calling for an end to the war between Israel and Hamas, saying Israel must stop the occupation of Palestinian territories. The South African Jewish Board of Deputies condemned the protest, saying there was no justification for Hamas's attacks on civilians when it attacked Israel over the weekend. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The protesters came from different backgrounds and nationalities across South Africa. They carried placards condemning the war between Israel and Hamas. At their demonstration outside the United States consulate Wednesday afternoon, they condemned the bombing and killing of civilians by both sides. They called on the United States, Israel's close ally, to urge Israel to withdraw from all Israeli-occupied territories as a condition for a peaceful existence. Protester Faye Rashid, who said she is a South African-born Muslim with relatives in Palestine, expressed sadness at the impact of the war on ordinary people.
Total destruction, our people are dying, little children are being harassed, little children are being killed, the families are destroyed. We stand with our brothers and sisters so that Palestine can be free.
Hamim Bumhad slammed the Israelis' blockade of Gaza imposed after Hamas fighters launched a surprise attack in Israel on Saturday.
There's no food, drinks, water, nothing going into the Gaza Strip. Stop the killing of innocent people and give the Palestinians the land that theirs. They're killing the innocent people, so they must stop this now.
Another protester, Mpo Masemula, told VOA that there was only one solution to the conflict.
We are saying the two-state solution should be implemented so that the Palestinian people should have a sovereign government and legitimate government.
The two-state solution proposes creating two separate sovereign nations, a state for the Palestinian people alongside the state of Israel. While it has been discussed internationally for 30 years, no progress has been made on implementing it. One man, who gave his name only as Steve, says Hamas should be blamed for the current destruction, not Israel. He also disagrees that a two-state solution would solve the current conflict.
The way forward is a one-state solution, in my opinion. I don't think there can be a Palestinian state within the bounds of Israel. I support the government that supports the security of Jews in this world. We support Israel.
Wendy Khan, National Director of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, said there cannot be any justification for the Hamas's violence in Israel. Hamas fighters killed concert goers, children and elderly people in their homes and seized more than 100 hostages when they attacked Israel.
No, Hamas is not the victim, they're the aggressor. And when you go and you do something as callous and as vicious and as horrific as you did on the weekend, you should be condemned. We should be the ones protesting, not the people who are supporting Hamas.
The South African government said the war is a result of Israel's occupation, and officials with the ruling African National Congress have called Israeli an apartheid regime. However, U.S. President Joe Biden described Hamas's attack as a terrorist assault against Israel. Tuso Kumalo, VOA News in Johannesburg, South Africa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Some 150 countries, many of them in Africa, have signed on to China's 10-year-old Belt and Road Initiative, also known as BRI. And while the multi-billion dollar global infrastructure project helped bring roads, rails, infrastructure, it also left some countries saddled with debt. VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Maria Madialo takes a look at the impact the BRI has had in Africa and the benefits and critiques of the Chinese initiative.
The standard gauge railway, which debuted in Kenya 6 years ago, was hailed by Kenyan officials as one of the biggest and most successful projects since the nation's independence in the 1960s. Travel time from Mombasa to Nairobi used to be up to 10 hours. Now, it only takes about 5 to 6 hours.
You are a businessman, you're going for an interview, it saves your time.
Kenya borrowed some $5 billion from China to build railway lines connecting the port city of Mombasa to Nairobi and Nairobi to Naivasha. This is part of Chinese leader Xi Jinping's Belt and Road Initiative, or the BRI. It's a global infrastructure, trade, and telecommunications project that includes the goal of connecting Kenya to Uganda, Rwanda, and South Sudan. Vincent Kimosop is a Kenyan economist and consultant with Sovereign Insight in Nairobi.
The good side, one is that it's a framework for transportation. Transportation of goods, transportation of cargo.
But Kimosop wishes some things were done differently for the railway, also called SGR.
I wish those who were responsible for negotiating the SGR would have actually looked at the repayment. It's a massive investment project. To have repayments be done in less than 20 or 30 years, that was quite ambitious.
During its construction, critics of the project protested its potential impact on wildlife. A part of this railway cuts through the Nairobi National Park. Over the last decade, some 150 countries have joined the initiative, including most African countries. China expert David Sachs.
Africa's population is growing significantly, and there's a need, you know, on the continent for more infrastructure. From the Chinese perspective, Africa is desirable because it wants to secure inputs for its manufacturing sector. And when it looks around the world, a lot of these, whether it's copper, cobalt, or other minerals, are found in Africa.
Countries such as Kenya, Ethiopia, and Zambia have seen massive Chinese-built infrastructure. But some countries have also been struggling with debt, including Zambia, a major Chinese borrower, which was the first country to default on its debt during the pandemic. The West has been critical of China for lending to poor countries and says it must quickly provide relief to those that ended up with unpayable debts.
Prompt action on debt is in China's interest.
Sachs notes a lot of countries joined BRI at a time when economic growth was quite robust, but that shifted.
The first shock, of course, was the COVID-19 pandemic, which really eviscerated global economic growth, but also hit the developing world particularly hard. And then the second one, I think, of course, was the war in Ukraine. Africa, major importers of food, as well as oil, prices for those commodities have gone up tremendously.
Back at the train station, many of these travelers mostly enjoyed their ride.
It is a safe mode of transport that we as Kenyans, we embrace it.
A recent Boston University study finds that lending to Africa by China has dropped to the lowest level in two decades. Analysts, however, say while the BRI is here to stay, Beijing may be moving toward smaller investments. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Malawi has started distributing free corn and cash to more than 4 million people facing food shortages, largely because of the impact of Cyclone Freddy. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
According to the report by the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, the number of people projected to face hunger this year in Malawi has increased to 4.4 million. From 3.9 million last year. Charles Kalimba is the commissioner for the Department of Disaster Management Affairs in Malawi. He says the hunger response effort for this year would cost Malawi about $226 million.
We were able to raise about $78 million, and that we are going to use as cash transfers, and government will provide 164,000 metric tons of maize to cover the deficit.
Cyclone Freddy, which also hit Mozambique and Madagascar, killed hundreds of people and displaced more than 650,000 people. The cyclone washed away 179,000 hectares of crop fields in southern Malawi. Maureen Likoswe is a farmer whose maize field was washed away in Chilobwe Township in Blantyre. Likoswe says she's excited about the relief program, but is hoping the assistance reaches all the beneficiaries.
We are happy at ICA to receive that donation. However, we wish to call on this government to do things differently from the way the other governments have been doing. Because sometimes what happens is the real beneficiaries who are supposed to benefit are sometimes left out. And then people who are not deserving to receive items end up receiving.
Kalimba said everything's in place to curb any form of corruption.
We will not tolerate corruption, we will not tolerate theft, we will not tolerate fraud. So just as we did last year, a number of councillors were arrested, a number of chiefs were arrested, officers were arrested, we are going to arrest again anyone who tries to misdirect the aid that is going to the people who are vulnerable.
Kalimba said people in southern Malawi, where Cyclone Freddy hit the hardest, will receive the relief maize for 6 months. People in other districts will receive the maize for a period of between 2 and 5 months until the next harvesting season in March.
Because of the intensity of hunger that we are noting in different places, we may have to push some councils that were supposed to start in December, January, to push them to start in November and see how we move.
In the meantime, Kalemba has advised people against selling the relief maize, saying those doing so will be arrested. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokibilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.